by staging these horrific attacks like this, by ramping up violence, is trying to extract more concessions from the United States.
Taliban attacks continue amid Afghan peace talks. It's Wednesday, September 4th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us as well on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, Hong Kong's chief executive stays put. India's citizenship crisis. Bulk buying is popular with Chinese shoppers. Elderly pumping iron and protest art on your body. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The Taliban claimed responsibility for an explosion in Kabul late Monday, just hours after a U.S. negotiator shared with Afghan President Ashraf Ghani key details of a deal that would see thousands of American troops leaving Afghanistan. An Afghan government spokesman said the blast in the Green Village compound, which houses international organizations and guest houses, killed at least 16 people and wounded 119 others. Police said they had rescued 400 foreign nationals from the complex and transferred them to a safe place. Earlier, U.S. officials said they had reached a draft framework agreement with the Taliban that will require some American troops to vacate five military bases in Afghanistan within 135 days of the signing of the document. Currently, 14,000 U.S. troops are deployed to Afghanistan, and there are seven known U.S.-run bases in the country. Michael Kugelman is the Deputy Director of the Asia Program and Senior Associate for South Asia at the Wilson Center in Washington, D.C. VOA Asia's Ira Melman asked him if the Taliban's continuing displays of violence were conducive to a peace agreement with the United States.
Well, unfortunately, this is the cruel logic of the Taliban. I know that as these negotiations have gathered steam with the United States and as they've gotten into their more advanced stages, the Taliban has been ramping up its violence. So this is not the first time in recent days that we've had a mass casualty attack in Afghanistan. I mean, basically what the Taliban is trying to do here is strengthen its position in talks. It wants to essentially send a message to the United States of, look, we can do this whenever we want. We're very strong. And if we don't get the type of deal that we want, we're just going to return to the battlefield and do more of this. In other words, the Taliban, by staging these horrific attacks like this, by ramping up violence, is trying to extract more concessions from the United States at peace talks. So yeah, I mean, it looks bad. The optics of it are atrocious. But this is what the Taliban does. And I should say as well, I mean, trying to look at this in a big picture, the United States has also ramped up its own offensives. It's been ramping up its kinetic activities, working with Afghan forces to push back against the Taliban on the battlefield. So both the U.S. and the Taliban have been ramping up the violence, so to speak. But with the Taliban, of course, what you have is the way they showcase their violent capacities and abilities is by staging these horrific attacks, even as we get so close to a deal with the United States.
Which one would think would mean that a deal isn't completely done, right?
Well, I mean, I think that it seems like every day for the last 2 months, there's been some type of media headline saying U.S. and Taliban very close to a deal, and yet then the deal is not finalized. I think it's going to be some more time. Clearly, one thing that's very clear is that President Trump himself has not signed off on the deal. So Zalmay Khalilzad, the top U.S. negotiator, has been very public in laying out many of the details of this draft deal, but he himself has said it a number of times that this is not going to be final until President Trump has been able to sign off on it. And I think that the U.S. is trying to do some damage control. Its relationship with Kabul is very bad, and I think that what the U.S. wants to do is to try to get as much buy-in and consensus from the Afghan government as it can. So Khalilzad was in Kabul recently to talk to the Afghan leadership about the deal, and as I understand it, the Afghan government is going to have a few days to sort of look over the agreement and get back to the Americans. I know that the U.S. is trying to share the draft deal with NATO partners as well. So I think it's going to be a bit more time, but I actually think they're fairly close to a deal. I think it's more an issue of when you get the buy-in that you need from the Afghan government and from other NATO countries. I don't really think there has to be that much more negotiating between the U.S. and the Taliban. At the end of the day, they both want a troop withdrawal agreement, and they've almost got one.
But is there any trust on either side?
Well, there has to be trust in the sense that there were 9 rounds of talks, which is quite extraordinary, and they did reach a draft. They reached an agreement in principle, but certainly there's a lot of suspicion. I think particularly on the U.S. side, I do think, though U.S. government officials would not state this publicly, I do think there's concern that the Taliban would not be willing to abide by the commitments and the promises that it makes in a deal with the U.S. And I think the main expectation of the Taliban is that it would, A, deny space to international terrorists, B, agree to a ceasefire, and C, agree to start talking with the Afghan government and other Afghan stakeholders. The deal itself would stipulate that all 3 of those things be done on the Taliban's part, but certainly there's some concern that the Taliban is just going to thumb its nose at those obligations and think that it can get a troop withdrawal deal that entails American forces leaving, which would give the Taliban a tremendous battlefield opportunity to just go out there and try to overthrow the Afghan government by force, which it's been trying to do for many years.
So what is your prognostication here?
I think there will be a deal signed between the U.S. and the Taliban. I think that the problem will be pivoting from the troop withdrawal deal between the U.S. and the Taliban to the broader negotiation between the Taliban and the Afghan government and other Afghan stakeholders. I just think it's going to be very difficult to get the Taliban on board with that idea. I think it's going to be very difficult to get the Taliban to agree to stop fighting or at least to declare a temporary truce, even though those are the obligations in the deal with the United States. You know, the Taliban for such a long time has wanted to destroy the Afghan political system as we know it and take over and impose a government along the lines of what it had in the late 90s when it ran Afghanistan for the most part, which was basically a system that reflected the most stringent manifestations of Sharia law. So for me, it seems sort of hard to believe that the Taliban would all of a sudden be willing to support the political status quo and work out some sort of political settlement in which it would share power with the current government. It seems hard to believe.
VOA Asia's Ira Melman speaking with Michael Kugelman, Deputy Director of the Asia Program and Senior Associate for South Asia at the Wilson Center in Washington, D.C. These are among some of the top Asia stories that you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. U.S. President Donald Trump warns China not to delay in reaching a trade pact. The Solomon Islands are eyeing a shift in diplomatic ties from China to Taiwan. Hong Kong's leader refutes saying she would quit if she had a choice. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories and much more when you visit us at Facebook at VOA Asia. We also invite you to stop by our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hong Kong Chief Executive Carrie Lam said Tuesday she has never asked the Chinese government to let her resign to end the city's political crisis. She was responding to a Reuters report about a voice recording of her saying that she would step down if she could. Reuters correspondent Michelle Hennessy has more.
Your answer does not arise. I have never tendered any resignation.
Hong Kong leader Carrie Lam was forced to respond to a Reuters special report on Tuesday. The report included leaked audio from a private meeting. She's heard telling a group of business people she would resign if she could and that she's stuck between two masters.
For a chief executive to have caused this huge havoc to Hong Kong is unforgivable. It's just unforgivable. If I have a choice, the first thing is to quit. Having made a deep apology, is to step down. The room, the political room for the chief executive, who unfortunately has to serve 2 masters by constitution, that is the Central People's Government and the people of Hong Kong, that political room for maneuvering is very, very, very limited.
Lam's resignation is one of the key demands of protesters who want her gone after she tried to pass a hugely unpopular extradition bill that would have seen suspects sent to mainland China for trial. It's since morphed into calls for the people of Hong Kong to be able to choose their own chief executive. Rolling protests show no signs of losing steam, despite more than 1,000 arrests since the outbreak of violence. On Tuesday, Lam said Beijing still trusts her government to solve this three-month crisis and that they'd never prevented her from stepping down.
In a private session, I just attempted to explain that as an individual, given the very difficult circumstances, might be it was an easy choice to leave. But I told myself repeatedly in the last 3 months that I and my team should stay on to help Hong Kong.
Later on Tuesday, China's Hong Kong and Macau Affairs Office said anyone who wants to achieve universal suffrage in the Chinese-ruled city will get nowhere, and reiterated Beijing's support for the embattled Carrie Lam.
Michelle Hennessy of Reuters. Happening now in Asia, China says it is not responsible for fentanyl deaths in the United States, despite charges by President Donald Trump. Beijing said Tuesday that no case of fentanyl smuggling has been reported since May 1st, suggesting that the drug is coming from somewhere else. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. UN High Commissioner for Refugees Filippo Grandi is urging Indian authorities to take steps to ensure that no one in the northeastern state of Assam is rendered stateless. Nearly 2 million people were recently struck off Assam's citizenship list and are at risk. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
The UN Refugee Agency does not question India's sovereign right and authority to establish who is an Indian national, but it says the risk of people excluded from the citizenship roll and becoming stateless is of great concern. UNHCR spokesman Baba Balash tells VOA all means must be taken to ensure this does not happen.
What we are asking India is to ensure that adequate access to information, legal aid, and legal recourse in accordance with UNHCR's mandate and international standards is followed so people are not left without a nationality.
People have 120 days in which to prove their citizenship before regional quasi-judicial bodies. Those deemed to be illegal immigrants can then appeal to higher courts. Balash says it is too early to know how this will work out. But he says he worries many people who do not have access to the right information and documentation and do not have the financial means to pursue the appeals process may end up stateless.
We are urging the government to take steps that mitigate the risk of any individual being left stateless as a result of this exercise. We have seen some encouraging statements from the Ministry of External Affairs that they will make sure that all the people who have been excluded have access to their rights.
The UNHCR warns any process that could leave nearly 2 million people in Assam state without a nationality would be a big blow to global efforts to eradicate statelessness. The agency estimates up to 10 million people are stateless worldwide. Stateless people lack all basic rights of citizenship. They have no right to an education, to work, to health care, or to register births or marriages. The UNHCR is calling on Indian authorities not to detain or deport anyone whose nationality has not been verified. India has defended its decision, with news reports saying the government carried out the exercise to detect and deport undocumented immigrants from Bangladesh. Some critics say the move is an attempt to deport millions of minority Muslims, many of whom came from Bangladesh. The Bangladeshi government has said it will not accept anyone deported from Assam. Bangladesh currently hosts more than 1 million Muslim Rohingya refugees whom the government of Myanmar has stripped of their rights of citizenship and rendered stateless. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Coming up, a rush to get into a store and no rush to visit a region. You're listening to VOA Asia.
After you listen to VOA Asia, you can see VOA Asia. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free. See us often at VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia. China is funding new efforts to boost its natural gas production, especially from so-called unconventional sources such as shale gas. China's efforts to reduce its dependence on gas imports are taking on increased importance in light of a festering trade war with the United States. Visit VOA Asia Facebook for this and much more. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, a large U.S. retail store opens with much excitement in China, while unrest and uncertainty drive tourists away in Kashmir. These are the topics on today's VOA Asia Business Scene with Skylar Ogden.
U.S. retail giant Costco recently opened its first store in China. The new Costco store will be targeting China's growing affluent middle class, who know the Costco brand from international travels. Julia Zhu is a Costco member.
So whenever I come back to China, I would bring many boxes of things back. Now Shanghai has one. I came here immediately to get a membership card.
Analysts say Costco faces a tough road and will be operating in an environment where many other international retailers have failed. Richard Zhang, Costco's senior vice president, says that the company has taken time to make sure that the market is mature enough and that consumers know their brand. Representatives say Costco's bulk buying strategy and practical approach will also help them avoid the pitfalls other businesses have faced. Costco will also shift its buying strategy when necessary. Richard Zhang is Costco Asia's senior vice president.
Some items would really get too expensive, so we would turn to other regions. For example, some fresh produce that we originally get from the U.S., now we would turn to Australia.
Costco's new business venture is launching in a still tense trading environment between the United States and China. It's expected that by the end of the year, the trade dispute will affect nearly all imports and exports between the two countries. In Kashmir, tourism has dropped after India revoked the region's autonomy, suspended phone and internet access in the region, and sent in government troops to control the region. According to government figures, the number of visitors dropped from more than 1.3 million in 2012 to 850,000 in 2018 in the Indian part of Kashmir. Many locals who make a living off of tourism are suffering. Bashir is a houseboat owner.
90% is tourism.
90% of Kashmiri people earn through tourism, so they're dependent on tourism. That's true like this, and they've trapped us. Even on Eid, we couldn't buy anything. We couldn't buy any vegetable. We couldn't buy any food for our family. We couldn't celebrate.
The estimated $500 million tourism industry is central to Indian Kashmir's economy and employs roughly 100,000 people. Once known as the Switzerland of the East, Kashmir's tourism continues to suffer amid ongoing tensions between Pakistan and India. For VOA's Business Scene, I'm Skylar Ogden.
This news break from VOA Asia, an official says Bangladesh's telecommunications regulatory body has asked operators to shut down cell phone services in sprawling camps in the southeast, citing a security threat. That's where hundreds of thousands of Rohingya refugees from Myanmar live. You'll find all the big stories throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, far from just playing backgammon or shuffleboard, today's senior citizens may want to renew their gym memberships. A new small sample study says that older adults benefit from the types of exercise just years ago thought too risky for their bodies. VOA's Arash Arabasadi stretches and warms up for this story.
In the Chinese capital, senior citizens shatter the stigma of old and frail.
I have nothing to do since retirement, so I just come here and exercise.
Yu Song Wang is a retired farmer. He's one of hundreds of older adults stretching and working out at the Temple of Heaven in Beijing.
I do not stay at home because there's nothing to do. I swim for an hour at the gym, then I work my muscles, and then billiards, whatever makes me happy.
Researchers say previous thinking that exercise is too taxing on seniors' bodies, even those who are relatively healthy, is outdated thinking.
By far the best strategy to protect against disease and age comorbidities is to adopt regular exercise.
Resistance training leads to increased muscle mass and bone density, both important for the well-being of aging bodies. Dr. Lee Breen from the University of Birmingham.
We set out to understand whether individuals who've been highly active for all their lives, or master athletes as we call them, whether their muscles responded any better to a single bout of resistance type exercise compared to your average Joe, your sedentary older person. And what we found was that their muscles responded identically to this bout of resistance exercise.
He says people in their 50s and 60s should structure 2 or 3 days each week for strength training.
We saw about a 20% increase in the muscle building response to resistance training, and that was fairly consistent across all of our older, untrained individuals in this study.
Breen says a gym membership is great, but that even body weight exercises reap benefits for seniors they studied.
The children have grown up. My grandchild has already gone to school. I am over 80 now. What can I do? I just exercise and try not to trouble my children.
The Birmingham study looked at 15 men between 65 and 80 years old. Breen says the university plans a separate study for women later this year. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
A peculiar form of body art is gaining popularity in New York City. It's protest body art, where people paint their bodies not with pictures and innocent images, but slogans aimed at fighting divisiveness. Nina Vishneva has the story narrated by Anna Rice.
New York protesters fighting against divisiveness have chosen a new, peculiar canvas for their slogans, their own bodies.
If it's too thick, it's like going to waste a lot of money. If it's too thin, you'll notice because it's see-through.
Andy Golub is a body painter and artist. His specialty, slogans and images that fit exactly between the shoulders.
We feel a certain amount of shame, a little fear, because, oh my God, I'm not good enough. And so the idea is, if once you believe that, well, I'm just a human being, like I'm not supposed to be perfect, I am good enough, then all of a sudden we love ourselves. And when we love ourselves, that's only when we can love each other.
New York officials initially took a dim view of his work, and Golub was arrested for public lewdness in 2011. Those charges were eventually dropped, and these days the police don't mind, as long as the body painting is part of an organized demonstration. Artists, bankers, office workers, people of all occupations and social statuses come here to make a statement. They all share Golub's belief that human bodies are more powerful than paper and banners. His parents are his biggest fans.
Well, he's been different since the day he was born. Very special.
Yeah, we have 3 kids. He could be crazy, and he could be the most charming guy in the world.
One of the least popular colors, black. Golub mostly works in bright colors, so his models can portray unity and optimism.
Why am I here? I believe in spreading unity. I believe in spreading the fact that nobody needs to be divided, no matter what lifestyle or whatever, who they happen to be.
Golub says he wants to change the way people view the human body.
This is America!
And his models say it changes the way they view their own bodies. From Nina Vishneva in New York, Anna Rice, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. We stream it every day on VOA Asia Facebook, perhaps. That's how you're listening to it right now. You can also find it on voanews.com. That's our website. We thank everybody who's been listening today, including everybody who joined us on Facebook at VOA Burmese. Thanks so much for listening to our program. We also thank our director, Tracy Carter, engineer Carl Starling, managing editor Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Ira Melman, Keith Lane, and we say hello to Michelle Liu, who streamed our program on Facebook. We hope you have a great day today.